says truth of a head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob and Enyard.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyard.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Fred, we're going to go right into the continuation of my interview with theoretical physicist Lawrence Krauss.
Emphasis on theoretical.
That's him. That's the guy. He's going to say, right at the beginning of this, he's going to say, there's no one I know who says that life is too complex to have evolved on Earth.
Well, what about Francis Crick, the discoverer of DNA? Didn't he say that aliens seeded life here because he couldn't understand how...
That's right. Know, he's one of a long list of scientists who've said maybe aliens brought it because it's so complex. Even Richard Dawkins said it famously recently.
Yeah, panspermia.
Then also he said this. He said, well, life might have evolved elsewhere because our sun is relatively young. Yeah, according to the Big Bang, some stars might be twice as old as ours, others three times as old, but that's it. So what I'm wondering is, what calculation do they have to form the first protein, the first enzyme, the first living cell, where they just need twice as much time, and then they solve the problem?
They need gazillions more time.
Yeah, they need to add like 30 zeros to the age of the universe to get their first protein.
Yeah.
And then all they have is a dead protein.
It's like removing a Big Mac from the national debt.
Right. Then also he talks about the Earth and how old the Earth is.
Oh, yeah. He claims it's 4.55 billion years old. You know, they add that second decimal place, but that's an illusion. And I love how you nail him on this one. You bet him $1,000, and he seems to kind of skip over your bet, but you're asking him, where's the evidence? What justifies that last decimal place?
Yeah.
They do that to try to sound more accurate.
Like, they really know what they're talking about. Yeah. It's not 4.5 billion. It's 4.55 billion years old. All right, so let's hit the tape. Thousands have posited that life might have come here from aliens, including the co-discoverer of DNA, Francis Crick. I can't believe you've never heard of this theory.
Transpermia. It's a fascinating idea.
Yeah, but do you agree with me that they're only punting? Because if biological life is so complex that it couldn't evolve here on such a hospitable planet, then why would it evolve somewhere else? You got the same problems there as here. Don't you agree they're just punting?
Well, first of all, the argument, there's no one I know who says that there's any evidence that life is too complicated to have evolved here. But one of the arguments for why it might have evolved elsewhere is our sun and Earth are relatively young. Earth is 4.55 billion years old. The galaxy is 12 billion years old. There are many stars and solar systems that are far older than our solar system. That an additional 7 billion years of potential evolution.
So, could I offer right now to donate $1,000 to a charity of your choice if you could show me a published peer-reviewed paper that actually has scientific observations and calculations within 100 million years that comes close to your 4.55 billion years old?
Oh, we can do it. There's tons of them.
That you agree with the science on. I'll donate. Just email me.
Compare it to the existence of the sun
and show that
the parameters only agree if it's 4.55 billion years old. We can
just
measure the abundance of various elements. And I mean, every single bit of data tells the same thing. You're not a young earther, are you?
Yes, I am.
Oh, well, then you shouldn't get in your car
or
use your toaster, because the same laws of physics and chemistry that say how they work tell us that they, I mean, that's a non sequitur.
To go from applied science to origins, you do this in your book a lot. You say, because we are starting to figure out quantum mechanics.
We
haven't figured out. You sound like Eugenie Scott. Beginning.
Quantum mechanics, we understand basic quantum mechanics. We understand how it works. We have the equations.
There's fundamental
for the telephone we're using right now.
There are fundamental mysteries about the nature of matter,
of course, that's why
energy,
science, because I want to explore those mysteries.
In life itself. So for you to say we really have figured out you don't need God to originate all those things.
Well, I'm just saying that we understand.
You're overselling.
Like, you don't need God to make an airplane fly.
Lawrence,
you figured out how it happened.
That's applied science. Then to go to origins, you're overselling your case. Mm-hmm. Just like you do in your book, you say all evidence now overwhelmingly supports the Big Bang.
Well, overwhelmingly is an understatement.
That's
all evidence supports that the Earth is round. All evidence supports that there was a Big Bang. All evidence supports evolution.
Lawrence,
all of these things are scientific.
I asked
facts.
You earlier to help me. Now, would there be many advanced degree scientists at leading universities who would agree with me and disagree with you?
No.
How about the 400 scientists who signed over at cosmologystatement.org saying that the Big Bang model, and you know what they signed, right? And I've got it in front of me.
I once with Eugenie made a T-shirt with, you know, 500 scientists named Steve.
I know, that's funny.
400 scientists to say the Earth is flat.
They have
the Earth is flat?
This is from Max Planck.
That's all it means.
Lawrence, this is from Max Planck Institute, Cornell University, George Mason.
What department?
Lawrence Livermore, Los Alamos National Labs.
Scientists don't argue on credentials. Unlike religion, there are no
scientific
authorities.
How about
and
this?
Scientists can be wrong.
How about this? NASA Kennedy Space Center.
Kennedy Space Center are also wrong. I've talked to them.
Let me tell you what they point out.
And by the way, there are approximately 40,000 physicists alone in this country. So you're telling me you get 400 nuts in 40,000 people. That's not too unusual.
The way that they're mocked, like by Richard Dawkins, saying the human eye would have been designed by an idiot. You'd have to be an idiot.
Surely, if it had been designed, it wouldn't have been designed the way we would have.
That's completely false.
Your evacuation system wouldn't have been designed the way it is, or the way you breathe wouldn't have been designed the way it is.
Lawrence, in 2 weeks, I'm interviewing a professor at University of California of ophthalmology, Gary Aguilar. The human eye, the nerve, comes out for us in the front and for an octopus in the back. And the reason, according to anatomists who published on this for 20 years now, Richard Dawkins is 20 years behind, is because an octopus doesn't look up at the sky and see the sun. So a bright light, a bright flash like a camera flash, is not going to kill a million cells in an instant. And in a human being, we live on the surface, we might glance up toward the sun. Just like you go blind for a moment when somebody takes your picture,
the blood cells, let me just finish the point, Lawrence. If you set up your TV, you put the cables behind
Lawrence,
the TV.
Lawrence, let me just finish the point. The nerve comes out of the front of the retina because we need the blood vessels available to quickly regenerate our eyesight. So within 1 to 2 seconds, you could see after somebody takes your picture, and it's called an optimal design by leading anatomists. Optimal.
Let's go back to the one thing you said that is absolutely ridiculous beyond belief. I mean, you've said a number of things.
Well, was that ridiculous beyond belief, what I just explained about the eye?
The details of it are, you could still design it so you didn't have to put a hole in it.
No, that's not true. There are trade-offs.
If you want to listen to me, then we shouldn't talk.
Go ahead.
Can I say a word?
Sure. Thanks.
Okay. When you hook up your TV, you may have your DVD in front of the TV and you have a lot of cables. You rarely will you drill a hole through the TV to put the cables through. What you'll probably do is wrap the cables around the TV so they don't block the TV. Well, in your eye, there's a hole drilled in. And you could call that optimal. You could call it not optimal. The point is it's there. And I doubt you would do that to your TV.
I can explain why that's incorrect.
You're arguing for specifics. Let's send back to more the generalities. How can anyone in the 21st century think the world is 6,000 years old and still consider themselves not a Neanderthal?
All right,
I'm amazed by that.
Right.
In every single bit of data, evidence of civilizations
The Neanderthal DNA has been sequenced.
Yeah, I know.
It's closer to you than a chimp is to a chimp within the same species of chimps. So the creationists who've been saying for decades that Neanderthals were people have been confirmed. DNA doesn't lie.
What do you mean people?
People. Human beings.
I mean, our DNA is within 97% the same as an amoeba.
That's not true at all, but a sponge.
I ran a meeting on early modern humans, and we're learning a tremendous amount about Neanderthals.
Stop the tape.
This is funny. We're 97% the same as an amoeba.
So next time I go to the zoo, I won't just see that the chimps are my close related cousin. I get to see that the amoeba is.
Yeah, not even the chimps are 97%. Now they're saying they're 95.2, which means about 150 million nucleotides different.
Yeah.
So he said we're 97% the same as an amoeba. It's not true. And he said, I ran a meeting. That doesn't matter, Lawrence. It's not true.
That meeting, I guess we learned that we're closer to amoebas than we are to chimps.
We must be. Right. So he made a mistake there. That's fine. And you can't say,
What do you mean, people?
What do you mean?
What is this people you speak of? I mean,
Caveman
this is
Fred.
That quirk of theirs where they start asking, well, what are people? What is Darwinism?
Yeah.
What is evolution? What do you mean?
What is neo-Darwinism?
This does not equate.
Sounds like the robot on Lost in Space. And Eugenie Scott did it. You can't say evidence in the plural. Aaron Rod did it. You can't say Darwinism. You can't say neo-Darwinism. It's like, what's that? What's panspermia? These guys have this weird quirk.
And then when you tell them there's all these advanced PhD scientists that disagree with him on the Big Bang, he said, what department?
The English department. They're all in the English.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was the Indian Affairs Department.
it's at the Max Planck Institute. Here's a few that have signed this cosmologystatement.org. Thomas Gold, professor of astronomy, not of music, at Cornell University, and he's a member of the NAS, most prestigious body of scientists in the world.
Yeah, Charles Orth, Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, a physicist.
He's a physicist, so he's not a plumber.
Yeah, he's not a plumber. Halton Arp at the Max Planck Institute. I'm sure he teaches 16th century French poetry.
In fact, he's been an astronomer with Mount Palomar and Mount Wilson Observatories. And then I like this guy, Anthony Perrott. He served for 30 years now in the Applied Theoretical Physics Division at Los Alamos National Laboratory. These are serious scientists, and there's hundreds of them, and they've signed this statement saying that the Big Bang is propped up by fudging the data and ignoring the observations.
That's right, and Dr. Krauss calls them nuts.
400 nuts. We got to send that audio of him saying that to them.
To those guys. There you go.
I'm going to do that, Fred. Real Science Friday package special delivery. I'm going to do that. So he says, well, there's 40,000 physicists. Well, how many are going to put their name on a scientific statement when they know they're going to be mocked and ridiculed and called morons and rejected for job applications because they're saying, look, there's a lot of evidence against the Big Bang.
Yep. And then I can't believe that he said that you can't drive your car or use your toaster because those inventions are based off of us knowing that the Earth is billions of years old.
Well, that's what happened. When they made the toaster, in fact, they had to wait until they came within 10% of the actual age of the Earth. Then they were able to make a toaster. Fred, you're an engineer at work. You guys have this GPS project. Do you base your projects on the Earth being 4 billion years old?
You know what? I remember now. I was in a meeting. And we were talking about improving GPS accuracy. Yes. And I said, hey, we should put in the equation the age of the Earth, and I think that'll really solve things. So anyways, I don't work there anymore, Bob.
So Fred got
fired. They would laugh me out of the room.
Yeah, and so many scientists have said that these things are not relevant to our day-to-day scientific discoveries and technological inventions.
Yep, okay. Resume the tape.
Our DNA is within 97% the same as an amoeba. I don't understand that's what
not,
your concern is.
Well, that's not true at all, but a sponge.
I ran a meeting on early modern humans, and we're learning a tremendous amount about Neanderthals, who, by the way, went extinct about 40,000 years ago. And it's very difficult to go extinct about 40,000 years ago
Lawrence,
in a universe that's 6,000 years old.
You know that there's carbon-14 everywhere it shouldn't be, right? Everywhere in diamonds and dinosaur fossils and coal and oil and gas.
And
dinosaur
soft
tissue.
This is really amazing because... You know, every single thing we teach high school students about the universe contradicts the possibility that the Earth is 6,000 years old, beyond the fact that we have direct relics of cave art that's 30,000 years old. We have evidence of civilizations that are 10,000 years old, and moreover, we have genetic and fossil evidence going back. And everything
we have blood vessels. We have blood vessels.
4 billion years old. We have many fossils that are almost a billion years old, and we have a tremendous amount of evidence of exactly how life evolved on Earth. And why must people reject all the knowledge we have
because
they insist that there are
because of dinosaur
the Bible must
blood
be
vessels.
Why don't you open your mind to the evidence of reality and say, look, if there is a God, the God as Galileo once said, if there is a God, he gave us a brain. We throw the brain out.
Dinosaurs. Papers are running 10 to 1 against the claim that the soft tissue in dinosaur fossils are bacterial biofilm contamination. 10 to 1. I'm talking about nature, science, paleontology.
You know, again, you've got a God of the gaps thing.
No God of the gaps.
We learn our ideas evolve.
Blood vessels, Lawrence, blood vessels don't hang around for 65 million years in sandstone in Montana. Harvard has sequenced proteins.
I've been with Jack Horner in Montana and seen the fossil blood vessels.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's perfectly consistent with things that are 65 million years old.
Oh, yeah,
you,
right.
Jack Horner, who was the person who discovered
how about the carbon 14? How about the carbon 14, Lawrence? There's carbon 14 in the mosasaur fossil that has soft tissue. Harvard has sequenced proteins from a hadrosaur. Carbon 14 can't last a million years, yet it
is
everywhere.
Could it be contaminated? I mean, you know, when you talk about anomalies, you know, you're like the people
who
tell me about UFOs, and they say, you know, right, there was a UFO sighting in this.
I agree with you.
You can't tell me it didn't happen. Well, you're absolutely right. There are anomalies.
I agree with you, but these anomalies are everywhere.
Ridiculous anomalies when there's a whole basis of knowledge, which tens of thousands of scientists have worked their whole life on, not because they're evolutionists or atheists, but because they want to understand nature and make the world a better place. And then people like you come along and say, I want to deny all that knowledge because I've decided in advance of reading anything, based on some book that was written God knows how long ago, that the Earth is 6,000 years old. And no matter what you tell me, I'm going to find an argument not to believe that. That's closed-mindedness.
Lawrence,
that's not open-mindedness.
The anomalies are everywhere worldwide. There's carbon 14, diamonds.
Don't talk to me about anomalies. Talk to me about the evidence of
carbon 14 decays with a half-life of 5,700 years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is hard evidence. It can't be neutron capture. The USGS shows how rare radioactivity is in the crust of the Earth.
Wait a minute, how rare radioactivity is in the crust of the Earth.
Yeah.
In fact, there's as much heat coming from the Earth due to radioactivity as, in fact, all of the Earth's radiant heat coming from the sun.
And what percentage?
There's a tremendous amount of radioactivity inside the Earth, so I don't know why. In fact, it's one of the fields I study. So, again,
about. On this, I think I know very much what I'm talking about. 90% of the Earth's radioactivity is in the crustal rock of the continents.
That's a true statement.
Right? And so if the chemical elements were created in stars and supernovas, then all this uranium and thorium and all, it should be evenly spread out through the core of the Earth, the mantle, the oceans.
It surprised me tremendously because as a physicist, I first thought, you know, the uranium and thorium, which is heavy elements, should be, in fact, in the Earth's core, not in the crust.
It should be evenly distributed.
They're large ions, and they float to the surface in a molten Earth.
Okay,
learn your chemistry.
Lawrence, I believe you. I believe you.
Okay.
But, wait a minute. They should be on the floor of the ocean. They are volcanoes.
No, they shouldn't be on the floor of the ocean because their abundance depends upon exactly whether they're in granite or there's a great deal of potassium, radioactive potassium, K40, underneath the ocean. But, in fact, the uranium and thorium is, in fact, preferentially, by chemistry and geology, inside granite. And that's just a differentiation of chemistry. And people spend their lives trying to understand that. They don't say, you know what, I want to find something. You know, I know in my heart of hearts for no reason except some inner voice in my mind told me the Earth is 6,000 years old. I know that's the case. Now, they open their mind and they say, let me try and figure out how the Earth evolved and work it out. And they do, and they work very hard. And I get particularly offended when people come up and try and say, you know what, all of that knowledge for the last few hundred years, I'm going to throw out because I know the answer.
So when NASA last year looked at the isotopes of the sun and the Earth, and they found out that the sun had different isotopes of oxygen and nitrogen than the Earth, and that was a surprise because they assumed that because all of our matter came from stars in a swirling nebula, there's not a good physical reason why we would have different isotopes.
There's a bunch of surprises. Why is the isotopic abundance of deuterium in the water on the oceans on Earth different than that in comets? It's been a big mystery. Actually, we've come up with some new developments there. There are lots of mysteries, and you know what? We try and solve those mysteries. We don't say, you know what?
Yeah.
Can't understand it. It's God.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a lazy man's way out.
Right. Could I ask you, Lawrence Krauss, and I know your time is valuable. I don't want to take advantage of your kindness. The book is A Universe from Nothing by Dr. Lawrence Krauss. Lawrence, just real quickly, let me give you a list of observations I've made about the Big Bang. You say all the evidence overwhelmingly supports it. Well, there are missing collisions. This is brand new science. In the spiral galaxy clusters, millions of years of missing collisions, the astronomers, astrophysicists are saying it's embarrassing, their words, they're too perfect. There's missing heavy metal from a trillion stars and 15 galaxies They say there's millions of years of missing heavy metal. There's missing stage three supernovas. Spiral arms are not deformed like they would deform in a couple million years. There's a missing echo of the Big Bang. There's a missing uniform distribution of isotopes.
Everything you said is wrong. I study numerical simulations. We are able to reproduce beautifully, in fact, better and better and better, the nature of spiral galaxies. And, in fact, because of the spiral arms are stabilized by the existence of dark matter, which is one of the other bits of evidence for dark matter.
Right.
The fact that we are more and more discovering early generation stars with some heavy metals, which are quite interesting, and it's one of the areas that I'm actually interested in, because that's the early evolution of stars. One of the reasons we're building the James Webb Space Telescope is to look at the first generation of stars so we can answer those questions. But none of what you said in any way not only obviates the Big Bang.
These are all missing.
It.
These are all things that are, you need secondary assumptions. You need rescue devices. You create unknowns.
We see the Big Bang. We look out and we see the Big Bang. When you say there's a missing echo, go out and look in the microwave background and see the cosmic
Lawrence,
microwave background, which is measured and is predicted as part of the Big Bang. It is measured to exquisite accuracy. One part in a million, it has the characteristics. It's the best
black
body background in nature.
What, the CMB you're saying?
The cosmic microwave
That's
background,
not
yes.
true. Okay, you say in your book.
You can won't measure it and tell me it isn't true.
You say in your book.
I've been studying the CMB for a long time, and I know what's true.
Well, you say in your book, you talk about the distribution of chemical elements in the universe, and you say that, I mean, you use really colorful language. This is the big proof of the Big Bang.
The fact that lithium is predicted to be 1 part in 10 to the 10th.
Yeah, and I have
24%.
And I have
that's what they work out to be.
And I have so many quotes, not only from nature and physics essays, and from hundreds of scientists at respected institutions that say this, that say those predictions are historically false. They were adjusted after the data was observed and repeated, and this is now being documented.
I take personal offense to that, because I predicted the abundance of light elements in the Big Bang, and I didn't, and I just did it based on the best physics we could come up with, computer codes and uncertainties in nuclear reaction rates as measured in nuclear reactors.
To say that I
fixed the data is obviously an offense to me personally.
All right. What do you say about this? In the journal Nature, 1990, a particular value for the baryon-photon ratio needs to be assumed ad hoc to obtain the predicted abundances. That is repeated and affirmed by hundreds of advanced degree.
We actually measure the baryon-photon ratio. All of the data only agrees for a specific value of the baryon-photon ratio. That's how you actually determine things, You measure things, and you see, and you compare with theory, and you see what agrees. That's how we do science. So we've actually measured the baryon-photon ratio. And the amazing thing is, we do a completely independent measurement. So we measure it from nuclear reaction data, and we determine that the baryon-photon ratio is a certain number. And then we go out and measure the cosmic microwave background, which is a totally independent way. It doesn't depend on nuclear abundances or anything. And you know what? It gives exactly the same value. Now that is science.
Now, I can't speak to what you just said.
Well,
of course
you can't, but
right.
I can.
Yeah, and you can. It does contradict a signed statement by hundreds of scientists.
Yeah, but I told you, don't give me signed statements. That doesn't matter.
Well, they're scientists just like you are, Lawrence.
I'm a scientist to sign a statement saying the Earth is flat. Are you going to run your show tomorrow?
No.
Saying, you know what? We don't really know the Earth is round.
No, the flat Earth guy is a Darwinist.
The decided to sign a statement.
All right.
I mean, come on.
The CMB.
Don't argue on the basis of that.
Let me ask you about the
science.
Let me ask you about the cosmic microwave background prediction. Wasn't it off by a factor of 10 universes? It didn't predict 3 degrees or 2.7, but 30 degrees. And so history shows that these predictions were adjusted after the fact.
That's according to
William Mitchell.
That's right. It's great you're saying it, but that's not that we actually measure the number. We measure the number, and it tells us what the number is.
But it's adjusted after the fact.
And then we run our theories. And, of course, we didn't know the expansion rate of the universe. And as we measure the expansion rate of the universe, we get better and better ways of testing it. And the point is, don't you understand that some scientists would love to find that all the data is false? Because they become famous. And the point
sure,
is, scientists don't do this stuff.
I understand that.
And wear hoods and say, look, let's not admit any evidence is false. Because the only way to become famous in science is to prove your colleagues wrong. If we could prove the Big Bang was wrong, I'd win a Nobel Prize for it.
Dr. Krauss, the other way to become famous, the best-selling atheist authors to me,
Well, they're all atheists, so it doesn't really matter. I don't know what you're talking about.
They're all atheists.
Essentially, the first approximation all scientists are, yeah. Most of them aren't atheists. They don't even talk about it. As my friend Steve Weinberg says, most scientists don't even think enough about God to know if they're atheists. It's just irrelevant to what we do in the laboratory.
You know, U.S. medical doctors are not theoretical physicists, but they're trained in applied science, the biological life sciences.
Yeah, well,
they're not the most ignorant.
They're
not the most ignorant group in the world, and 60% say God was involved in the origin of life. 60%.
Yeah, but medical doctors aren't evolutionary biologists.
I know that. I just said
but
it's applied science.
Quantum mechanics believe that you know, God was involved in the evolution of life. It's a nice statement, but I don't care whether it's 60% or 6%. I compare what the data tells me. I don't do things by votes or authority. That's what religion does, maybe. But science does things by looking out at the universe. And don't give me arguments about 10% of people think this or that. You know what? The fact that there are more. I mean, it's just amazing to me. If you could take polls of people, do you know 50% of American adults think the sun orbits the Earth?
No, I don't. I don't believe that.
The National Science Foundation does that study every year. Are you going to argue to me?
Lawrence.
Hold on.
I don't believe
that. In classes,
it.
We should teach that the sun orbits
no,
the Earth because
50%
of people think that.
I bet you not one hundredth of 1% of U.S. medical doctors believe that. And I don't
even believe
the study anyway.
You can bet me all you want. I'm giving you a statistic which shows you if you want to take polls of people, you're going to find out the most ridiculous nonsense is believed by many people. And don't use that to validate your arguments. It just demeans your arguments.
Well, I agree with you that the truth isn't up for popular vote. I agree with that.
Okay,
the point is...
And the way we try and find the truth is to rule out... And in fact, science doesn't really, believe it or not, deal with truth. It deals with falsehoods. We make predictions, and if they don't agree with observations, we know they're false. If they agree, it doesn't tell us it's the absolute truth. It tells us we're on the right track, and we keep exploring more and more and more and refining our ideas. That's why science changes. That's why science makes progress. That's why you can live in a universe now where you can talk to me on the phone or Skype me, whereas 100 years you couldn't. Science makes progress.
Not a single invention. We listed 100 inventions on this show, Real Science Friday.
Okay.
Not a single one required Darwinism. One of the members of the National Academy of Sciences,
Philip Skell, analyzed natural selection is the basis of many vaccines.
Philip Skell analyzed modern biology. You can't do biology without
understanding the evolutionary basis.
That's
of
what
life.
Doug Zansky
you
said.
You can tell me that, but again, that, it's just as ignorant as the rest of your statement.
Lawrence,
look,
that's
you
what
know
Doug Zansky.
I really have a
you've gotta go.
Meeting where I've got to go.
Can I make a last point?
Well, I've got a meeting with a postdoc and a graduate student where we're trying to actually go and do science.
I'm trying to argue with you
on the basis
of
evidence, and you keep giving me this anecdotal stuff, and it's just not worth having a discussion because, first of all, nothing I'm going to say, no data I'm ever going to talk to you about,
that's
is
not
ever
true.
Going to convince you of something that
that's
you've already
not,
decided is true.
That's not
that's
true.
That's not the way science works.
That's not true, Lawrence. The New Testament says... You can falsify Christianity. Could be falsified.
Great. We have in many cases.
That's not true.
We falsified most of the things in the Bible.
But I am open. Are you open to the possibility that Darwinism is false?
What do you mean Darwinism?
Evolution.
Make it sound like communism. Am I open to the possibility that all of evolutionary biology is based on a false premise? Well, there's that possibility, but it's incredibly remote given the fact that it's the basis
of
modern...
Well, Dr. Philip...
I am willing to argue that maybe Newton and Einstein and everything I know about physics is somehow wrong, but boy, it'd have to be an amazing conspiracy.
All right, Dr. Philip Skell of the NAS said he analyzed 100 years' worth of Nobel Prizes in biology, and he personally interviewed dozens of world-renowned scientists, and he said he could not find one Nobel Prize in biology in a century that depended on the theory of evolution
or
Darwinism.
Well, it's nice that he says that. But why do you actually take the National Academy of Sciences, the same organization, puts out a book, which you should get, which actually talks about evolution and explains the basis of modern science.
Yes, we went through
there. The National Academy, that group of the most esteemed scientists in the country, has, in fact, put out a book for the public.
I know.
Explaining the misconceptions that people like you have and why they're wrong.
There's a worldview bias. So people look at Origins and they say, we know that you don't need a God. And that's an overselling of what we know.
I don't know that you don't need a God. The question is, do you or don't you? I don't know anything until I investigate it. That's why I'm
well,
a
do
scientist.
You know? Do
you
know?
You know everything before you investigate it. That's why you're a creationist.
Do you know that you don't need a God for Origins? Do you know that?
No, absolutely not.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely not. And that's why I'm open-minded. But I demonstrate that based on what we see, there's no evidence for it. And that's an interesting result. And I do it with an open mind.
Well,
but
how about the discovery?
Conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Okay,
God bless.
Bye-bye.
I appreciate you. Fred, we were both jotting down notes about things to discuss from what Lawrence Krauss said in that last segment. For one, he talked about cave art and civilizations that are 10,000 years old.
Yeah, he was ridiculing your belief in a 6,000-year-old Earth.
Yeah, he was. And I was thinking about Egyptian mummies, for example, because that's science. And they looked carefully at the proteins, at the cells, at the DNA, and the conclusion was that these kinds of biological molecules, that they break down rapidly over a period of thousands of years, and now we're finding them in a T-Rex.
Yeah, and he said that discovery of soft tissue in dinosaur bones is perfectly consistent with 65 million years old. What's perfectly consistent, when we look at it scientifically, and not just those statements like he said, we look at it scientifically, we see mummies are decaying.
Yeah.
And these are things that they work hard to preserve. And,
right.
And we see it decaying in thousands of years, not over 65 million years old. These things are going to survive? No
yeah.
way.
And plus that they all have carbon-14. So it's all contamination. But what's funny is, if it's contamination in a T-Rex bone, then wouldn't the soft tissue have been contaminated and no longer have blood vessels and blood cells and hemoglobin? And if you got contamination, you're not going to have the blood vessels. You can't have it both ways. You can't have bones that are being contaminated keep blood vessels for 65 million years. Not only that, I remember going to the Anatolian Museum in Turkey. What's the capital of Turkey?
Isn't it Anchorage? Oh, no, that's Alaska. Ankara.
Ankara. And they have there the oldest metal objects in the world. And the oldest one is dated about 4,000 years ago. Written human history, the history of human languages, it matches so beautifully to the general framework of biblical chronology. Isaac Newton wrote a whole book on it. And he said, where they claim that there are Egyptian dynasties that are older than the Bible's chronology, he said that it's the Egyptian chronologies that are wrong because they're unreliable. He wrote more about the Bible than he did about physics.
That's right.
And math,
yep.
Isaac Newton.
So what about granite, Bob? Isn't that a magnet for radioactivity?
That is...
For thorium and uranium.
Good. That is so funny because Lawrence Krauss, basically, he agreed with me that... The radioactivity, 90% of it is in 1/3 of 1% of the mass of the Earth. That's weird. Because if uranium and thorium came from stars that exploded, you would think it'd be under the oceans, in the mantle, all over the
and
place.
And well distributed, right?
Well distributed. But it turns out the oceans cover 2/3 of the globe, but 90% of the radioactivity is concentrated in the crust of the continents, just the continents. And so... He said, well, it's by the granite. Well, I like how you put it. Granite is not a magnet to attract uranium. And so his answer to why it's not spread all over the world is, well, of course, it's by the granite. And Walt Brown, you and I did a show. You remember that show we did?
Oh, it was awesome. On radioactivity, the origin of radioactivity.
Oh, what a fabulous show. Anybody interested, listen to that show, and then you will learn why the radioactivity is concentrated around the granite in the continents. You'll learn why it's so great.
It's all about voltage.
And the quartz that's in the granite, yeah. In the piezoelectric effect. Fred, carbon-14 everywhere in diamonds and coal and dinosaur bones. He says, don't talk to me about anomalies. I mean, that's how Johann Kepler discovered the laws of planetary motion, by looking at the anomalies.
The anomalies.
Things were not how they were supposed to be based on the current theory.
Yeah, and he makes it sound like there's a few anomalies here and there. They're all over the place.
Right.
It shoots a huge hole into their theory.
Yeah. Is it still an anomaly if it's everywhere you look?
Yeah.
Then we get to the Big Bang, and Lawrence Krauss said every bit of data overwhelmingly supports the Big Bang. And you know what I'd like to do? I did give a list of about a half a dozen things. huge scientific observations in the heavens, huge observations that contradict, at least on the surface, the scientists at NASA and elsewhere who made these observations say this is not what we expected from the Big Bang. So that doesn't support the Big Bang. If they're admitting, and they do in every example I give, that why is it this way? This is not what we expected from the Big Bang. So that doesn't support the Big Bang.
Yeah, and Bob, they're just a different group of nuts. I'm just doing my Dr. Krause imitation.
A different, yeah. This is the current leading scientists at NASA and elsewhere who are saying, look, there are all these problems. And you take each one individually, boy, that's an interesting problem. But then when you add them all together, you realize that there are dozens of major observations that seem to contradict the Big Bang. He denied all that.
Well, Bob, different group of nuts.
They're just... Fred, then there was the couple predictions we talked about. The CMB, the Cosmic Microwave Background Radiation of the Universe. The whole universe has a temperature. It's 2.7 degrees Kelvin.
He used a straw man argument. He said, because we can precisely measure it, as if that proves that there was a Big Bang, that we can precisely measure something.
We measure it, and it's astounding that he said it's consistent to one part in a millionth, and that's about correct, I believe. So what's interesting is there's not enough time since the Big Bang for the temperature to even out the way it has, so they need yet another rescue device, a wild secondary assumption of the inflation theory.
Absolutely.
That many astronomers, astrophysicists say that doesn't even qualify as a scientific theory because it's this wild speculation with no physical mechanism to start it or to stop it.
It's a low-grade hypothesis, and it's their speed of light problem in space.
They
try to throw that at us, but they've got a worse speed of light problem.
It's the horizon problem.
Yep.
How does the whole universe get to be the same temperature? Here's a quote from Physics Essays about the CMB. That's that cosmic microwave background radiation at 2.7 degrees. So here we go from June 1997, Physics Essays. This is an authoritative publication, and this is what they write, June 1997, page 370. History also shows that some Big Bang cosmologists' predictions of the CMB, it's also called the MBR, microwave background radiation, some of their predictions of the CMB temperature have been adjusted after the fact to agree with observed temperatures. And that's by William C. Mitchell. And the article is titled Big Bang Theory Under Fire. The Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in 2003 published an alternative model to the Big Bang, which said that we have a universe that is bounded with a center. That contradicts the Big Bang.
Now, absolutely.
So it's not as though everyone who is a scientist agrees with Lawrence Krauss that all the evidence points to the Big Bang.
Remember, Dr. Krauss said that he was offended because he's one of the scientists that made predictions about elements and that proved the Big Bang.
Yeah. Well, let me give these two quotes. Physics Essays, 1997. The study of historical data shows that over the years, predictions of the ratio of helium to hydrogen in a Big Bang universe have been repeatedly adjusted to agree with the latest available estimates of that ratio as observed in the real universe. All the scientists who signed cosmologystatement.org, in their statement, they say that this is true. They say the so-called predictions were not predictions. They were fudged after we got the data.
That's right. And him saying he's offended doesn't remove that as the truth.
Right. And so here's another quote, and then I'll go to Nature.
Okay.
The estimated ratio has also been arbitrarily adjusted to agree with the currently established helium to hydrogen ratio. These appear to have not been predictions, but merely adjustments of Big Bang theory to accommodate current data.
You're getting this from creationist blogs, right?
No. Now, Fred, from Nature.
Nature.
Now, Nature's the motherlode.
Yes.
Of the Big Bang and evolutionary dogma. The journal
That's
Nature.
That's the Pravda of evolution.
From 1990, it is commonly supposed that the so-called primordial abundances of, and they mentioned deuterium, helium, and lithium, provide strong evidence for Big Bang cosmology. But A particular value for the baryon to photon ratio needs to be assumed ad hoc to obtain the required abundances. I'm going to look more into that, as Lawrence Krauss said, and he is a physicist, and I do think we need to respect him when he makes comments on statements of fact, like remember my flub with the electron to proton mass ratio, but it's their conclusions that we challenge.
Yeah, I wonder if he'll correct any of the things he said that were wrong.
He says, we don't take polls. We don't count how many people believe. Oh, you don't count how many people, except for Steve's,
yeah, they did
who believe in evolution.
Steve project. By he bragged about helping start that. And then he contradicts himself by saying you shouldn't do stuff like that.
You shouldn't do that. And then he says, by first approximation, all scientists believe that there's no God. All scientists believe in evolution.
All are atheists.
So he could do it, but we can't do it.
How about his claim that 50% of the people think that the sun goes around the earth?
What people do you speak
of? The people that go to the Indian Affairs class.
Fred, he was wrong about that. He said the National Science Foundation does the study every year, 50%.
Every year they do that study.
There was a Pew Research study back 4 years ago or so that said 18% of the public, and that's a very high number. Now, a lot of people are smoking pot as compared to 60 years ago. But you know what I think, that 18%? And I pointed out not 1% of medical doctors would say that. And so his argument even there is not valid to offset the point I was making. He's talking about people who are scientifically illiterate. But, Fred, I think a lot of that 18%, as in a substantive percentage, a lot of them just answered because they were put under pressure. And people do tend to panic. And if you ask them, draw a diagram of the solar system, put the sun, the earth, the moon, and planets, I bet you a significant percentage of those 18 would show that the earth goes around the sun.
Well,
I think
some of them, the evolutionists would first start off by, what are planets?
What's our planets? What do you mean, earthling? And last thing I'd like to comment on, when he said that science doesn't deal with truth, it deals with falsehoods, that's the kind of word game that they take comfort in. Because when you've proved a theory wrong, right, falsehood, then you have a new truth.
They like the word false. They seem to emphasize false.
They like to think that truth doesn't exist. But when you assert that a theory is wrong, you now have a new truth, which is a falsification of a theory.
Yep.
So, Fred, thank you. This is our Real Science Friday presentation of the interview with theoretical physicist Lawrence Krauss.
Emphasis on theoretical.
Yeah, that's right. And our website is realsciencefriday.com. And if you enjoy this program, we need your support to stay on the air and stay on the internet. So click on the store. Go to the science department. You will love it. God bless you guys.
Hey, science fans. Now you can have all of the Real Science Friday shows on MP3 CD from 2007, 2008, or 2009. Hear Bob and Fred present the compelling scientific evidence that the Earth is young and that there is a creator. Real Science Friday 2007, 2008, and 2009 are each available by calling 1-800-8-NYART. Or you can get the MP3 CDs or the MP3 downloads at kgovstore.com.